Thank you so much. Such a privilege to be here with everybody. Some I know, some I don't, but I feel like I know you. That's the wonderful part of this program. Just have a certain feeling about it. I don't know how to express it. I just don't feel like I deserve this beautiful office. All these nice people here, pretty decorations, and I just want you to know that it means a lot to me. It means an awful lot to be thought about. There was a day in my life that nobody wanted me. Nobody, not even my children. When I get up here and I shake like I'm shaking now, I think about my little Rusty. He'll be 13 years old in April. This happened about, I suppose it was about 3 years ago. He was about 9 years old and he was playing that little termite football deal, you know. And my little boy that's 19 now was the coach. And I thought, oh, Lord, we sure are going to have a lot of problems. Brother the coach and Rusty the player. And Rusty wasn't a little star either. He was just, you know, one of those little substitutes. And they made out pretty good. And one Saturday morning, early, the phone rang. And I heard John say, oh, no. Oh, no. Well, he came back to the breakfast table and he looked at Rusty and he says, Rusty, you're it. And Rusty says, what you mean? He said, that was the star quarterback is sick and he won't be there. So you're it. Rusty says, oh, no. Then he says, Mama, it's always cold in here. And that little fella, you know, he was nervous and he was shaking. And always when I get up here and I shake like this, I think about that. It helps me to think about it a little bit, and then maybe I quiet down. This is not a pretty story. And I don't have any jokes to tell. You know, a drunk woman is about the ugliest thing there is. Anyway, that's what I think. Anything you all don't like tonight, just don't pay any attention to it. Just sort of throw it out the window. But if you like anything I have to say, think about it. I grew up in Montgomery and I was a mighty immature little old girl. I just didn't seem to adjust and grow up like I was supposed to. Now, I was spoiled, real spoiled. I was of divorced parents, and my grandmother just thought the sun just rose and set in me. I went along getting more spoiled all the time, and I got to be about 16 years old, you know. Still just a little bitty girl. But I was sick. I had a rash on my foot, and in those years, they didn't know how to doctor things. They didn't know about the antibiotics and all, and they said soak it in black chloride of mercury. And it just promptly took all my skin off my foot, you know, and I was in sort of pain that night. And my grandmother was a dear old woman. She was old then, and she was so good, and she thought, a little drink of whiskey would just solve most any problem. It was sick. And so she suggested to my mother to give me a drink. That was my first drink, and I drank it straight. And my grandmother looked at me, and she said, look at her. She looks like an old topo. You know, I always drank my whiskey straight. I couldn't fool around with all that mixing it up. Took too long. I didn't start to drink then. I didn't drink in my teens. My mother has told me so many times, you know, She'd say, you never gave me any trouble when you were growing up. But, oh, she had so much trouble with me after I was supposed to be grown. Well, I'm going to tell y'all how old I am, because I don't like for folks to have to figure things out. I don't want you to make me older than I am. I'll be 47 years old in March. And I was graduating from high school, you know, in the period of the Depression, about 1933. And there wasn't any money in my family, and there were some half brothers and sisters then. And it wasn't one but one thing for me to do, and that was go to work. So I went and took me a business course and got a little job and thought I was just so well off because I made $5 a week. And at the end of that year, I went to this man. He was a lawyer, and I called him by his name, and I said, you know, I worked pretty hard. I think I deserve a little raise. And he said, Miss Rose, time's so hard, I'm thinking about letting you go. So I went and got me another job. You know, people just always been so good to me. They just give me jobs and put up with me. Well, this time I got a job making $50 a month. And, ooh, I thought I was real rich then. I could just do around, you know, and I was working for another lawyer. He had known me all my life, and I think he sensed I was not very happy at home. I wasn't. I had seen a lot of drinking in my immediate family, and I didn't like it. I knew what whiskey would do to people. I saw the unhappiness it caused. And I just wasn't real happy, because now that's not why I wasn't happy. I just wasn't adjusting. See, I wasn't growing up. I was just sort of floundering around. Nothing was ever good enough for me. I always wanted a little bit better. And the main thing, I always wanted things my way. You know? Well, he suggested to me one day, he said, would you like to go to Washington, D.C. to work? And, oh, that sounded so glamorous. And I thought, oh, yes. And to my surprise, in a week's time, now I was on my way to Washington, D.C. to work. I was going to work for the Young Democratic Clubs of America at the Showroom Hotel. And I thought, ooh, this sure is going to be wonderful, you know. Make $135 a month. Well, even that long ago in Washington, D.C., that wasn't much money. But I thought, ooh, this is great. Well, I went up there, and I'd been used to dating every night and carrying on, having a good time. Didn't have a date. Well, I always cried, you know, when things didn't suit me. So I cried and carried on. Dolly from Montgomery found out that I wasn't having any dates and I was homesick, so he asked this young man to have a date with me. This young man is the man I'm going to have to refer to in my life. He told this boy, I said, now I have a date with that girl, but she's a sad girl. I know her. So don't expect me to go back. But you know what? Johnny, he showed up about an hour and a half late. I thought I would have stood up. And he's just drunk. That drunk is $400. And he walked in, and he walked right up to me, and he kissed me. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I never have seen anybody like you. I ain't never yet either. Well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, he's begging me to go to Maryland and marry him, and I beg him to take me home. Well, in 3 months, he said, well, I can't go to law school at night and guide folks through the Capitol in the daytime and talk to you on the phone and try to coach you a little bit. Said, we just have to get married. And I said, all right.
Well, you know, I told you he was drunk. He liked to have a good time. He liked the gals, and he liked to drink. He liked to go over to the racetrack and all the things that, you know, that we like to do sometimes. And we had lots of fusses, and I just couldn't stand it. I said, you're just going to the devil. And he'd say, oh, you just ought to be a member of the WCTU. Y'all know what that is. Well, I just didn't know. I just thought, oh, Lord, I just don't know what in the world we're going to do. Well, before you know it, you know, we're going to have a baby. And I couldn't stay up there in Washington, D.C. to have that baby. I had to run home. I couldn't do it. I couldn't, those years, I couldn't accept my responsibility. I couldn't face life. I just couldn't adjust, that's all. Well, I went down, had the baby. And I was mighty ill. That little girl will be 25 years old in March. She was a little premature baby, and she didn't weigh 3 pounds when she was born. I had double pneumonia, and the doctors gave John no hope. But you know, that impressed me at all. The day I left that hospital, the Catholic nuns and the nurses tried to show me what I had, how grateful I should be. And you know, I didn't know how to be. I really didn't. I was thinking about two things. How was I going to get back up there to him, and what was he doing? That's all I was thinking about. When I went back to Washington, which took me a long time, just fall. I had to stay down there and let them wait on me and do for me. I couldn't do anything for him. Finally went back up there, and I thought I had a brimstone. I thought, now, if I start to drink with John, all our problems will be over. Well, that's when our problems started. I never could drink at all. Now, I don't mean to say that I took a drink bam and I was an alcoholic. That was not the case. But I do believe that I was alcoholic waiting to drink. I started to have my blackouts early in the game. I never could drink as a lady. And for many years, that was my ambition. Isn't that a funny ambition? Well, so you know it, we're going to have another little baby. I had to run home to Mama again. This time, I didn't stay quite so long. I came right on back. You see, again, I was concerned about what he was doing. I had to know. My life revolved around him. So I went back in a hurry. After this little girl was born is when my drinking really started to progress. And my thinking seemed to be getting more fouled up. My self-will was getting worse. I had to have my way all the time. I never will forget the day that I went to John and told him that we must go back to Alabama to live. That I just couldn't raise my children in Washington, D.C. And you know I nagged that poor boy to death till he finally took me back. He had finished his law. He had a law degree by now. And so I
thought up the idea of taking the children to my mama, let her take care of them. And I would get a job, and we'd save this money up, you know, and go back to Alabama and live, and John would be a fine lawyer someday. We didn't ever quite make the grade, though. Got back up there and got another job. And we really started in on the drinking. See, we didn't have anything we had to go home for then. We didn't have any responsibilities except ourselves. And we were on the town every night. One Saturday, we were going over in Maryland to get some chickens from a lady over there. And you know, we alcoholics, we pick out funny people. We always pick out the wrong ones, look like. This lady worked for John's brother-in-law that was in Congress at that time. And I remember taking my last drink, and I don't remember anything else. So the next morning, we left the house. John ran into a man on the man side of the road and jumped out and called him for his name. Well, those policemen were going to be nice to me, send me home in a taxi cab. You know, I was young. They passed off on me. But as soon as I saw him touch him, I called him an ugly name. So they put me in jail, and I stayed there. And I never will forget telling those people who I was. And you know, I was fighting back at them because I was so humiliated and so crushed that I thought I was going to die. And I made another broad statement. I said, "Ooh, this will never happen to me again." But it did. I can tell you truthfully tonight that from that day forward in my life, I was as scared of a drink of whiskey as I was a rattlesnake. But I always went on and drank it. I was drunk that Sunday afternoon. You know, John was getting worried about me about that time. He had me way up here on a pedestal. Now, you know, all you men put your wives up there. That's not anything different. But the important thing was that I was chipping this thing down slowly. And he was worried about it. And he was worried about my drinking. Well, we came on back to Alabama and was doing the war. Couldn't find a place to live, and it was mighty convenient, too, to just live with my mama. Because she already had two little girls, and she could just babysit for us every night. And we could just go out and drink. And that's what we did. And I got me another job. Well, John didn't. He said he just wasn't going to be in any hurry. He's going to take him a little rest. I just go on and go to work. You see, he required me to bring my paycheck to him with the name on the back of it. And I did it, too. Well, you know, I just don't have another baby. And at that time, his mother died. Now, his daddy was a judge, and he was a sort of a stern old gentleman. He was of the old school, don't do as I say, don't do as I do as I say. He came to me one day, and he said, "Daughter, you and John and the children are coming to live with me, and you're going to keep house for me." And I said, "Yes, sir." I couldn't say anything else. Well, his oldest son lived there, and Oh, you know it. He brought him a wise lamb. And here I was, drinking every night. Got three little girls, a sister-in-law and a brother-in-law. And I'm trying to suit the judge. And I'm trying to do everything in the world John tells me to do. And I was trying to satisfy anybody. Oh, I was so frustrated. And I was so sick. I didn't know it, but I was. You know, one of my sister-in-laws, the one that is the wife of the congressman, made a special trip to Montgomery, Alabama to tell me, Rose, if you're a smart girl, you'll get out of this. I thought she was being ugly, hurting my feelings. You know, I just cried every time anybody said anything about me. If anybody said anything about my drinking or said anything like that to me, I just bawled. Well, we went along, and so you know it, don't have enough, baby. This time we got little John, though. Got us a little boy. Bless his heart, I did him so bad. Oh. Do you know that I used to stay awake at night just scared to death that I was going to go to the hospital drunk to have that baby? God's so good to us. He didn't allow that. After little John was born, my drinking just got really in bad shape. And John was real worried about me, but he had gotten to the point he's real mad with me, too. He just couldn't stand this business, and I don't blame him. Every time I'd go somewhere, I'd work so hard to get myself to looking nice, you know, and I'd go out and fall down, burn a hole in my dress, or embarrass him. Of course, he's drunk, too. But still, he didn't like it. I was his wife. Well, one day he came to me, and he had a good job. He was a salesman. He told me, he said, Mama, I'm going to Texas and make us $1 million. And he said, you know, these folks are going to think that I'm going off and leaving you. Well, don't let them tell you that. He said, as soon as I make some money, I'll send for you. Of course, the truth of the whole thing was, that's what he was doing. He turned. Well, I had to face his daddy. I had to face my mama. I had to face his boss. And I had to face all these people. Tell them. I didn't know where he was. I knew Dawn, Texas. Y'all know I couldn't do that. I just couldn't do it. So every night I got drunk. That's working. Working all day. Had those four little children. Well, one day he sent me $100. He sent it for me to pay it on some old bills. You see, I'd gotten so resentful of signing the back of that check and him going off on weekends and staying and I not know where he was. And when he come back, I'd go downtown and charge a whole bunch of stuff to him. You know, punish him a little bit. So it was a lot of bills, and he sent me that $100 to pay on those bills. But you know what I did? Went and bought me an airplane ticket and went to Texas. Of course, I got drunk first. Fell down, cut my mouth. Showed up, you know, I just all dressed up. Patch on my mouth, and John met me at the airplane, and he was so mad he could have died. It was the first day he'd been sober since he'd been in Texas. Well, he was making them, he's making a heap of money. He was a porter in the Rice Hotel. Well, I stayed, you know, and I didn't want to go back home, but I had to. Always having to go back, face these folks. Well, now it's getting to be about Christmas time. You know, we alcoholics, how close we are. When you get husband and wife together, and I don't know about y'all, but John and I just ought to have a mighty close feeling. We fuss and carry on and all, but we might close. So he won't come home. He came home. Right after Christmas, that was a horrible Christmas. I showed myself off mighty bad. His daddy called him in and said, "Now, son, this woman you married to is not a fit wife. Nor is she a fit mother for these children of yours." And he said, "I thought about putting her in Bryce. You know, that's the mental hospital." But he said, "She's just so high strung, I don't know. So the only thing I know to do is for you to divorce her." So he said, "Yes, sir." So we went down, we got the divorce. Judge Britton took my little John and Ducky, and I took Daryl and Riley. John and I signed the divorce papers and went to a bar and got drunk. And I told him that day, I said, "I signed these papers, but I'm just not so crazy about this." And he said, "Well, let's go along for a while, and if things ever get too bad, you'll always know where I am." Well, I meet him, you know, and my mother called me in one day, and she said, "Now, darling, you know, in the eyes of society, you're not married to John anymore." I said, "Yes, ma'am. Does it make me mad?" Now, she thought I could drink beer. So she'd keep a little beer there for me. I got me another job. So one day, John ran into this man that I had had to face when he went to Texas. And he said, "John, you know, I found out what your trouble is." Said, "The reason you didn't do well in Montgomery is because you were not under direct supervision." Said, "You come to Birmingham and wait for me, and I think everything'll be all right." He lasted 48 hours under direct supervision. Now, before John left Montgomery, though, like I say, I had told you, he was worried about me. He had met a man in the pool room named Easy. And he used to tell me about this man. He says, "Mama, you know, he's been sober a long time." And I say, "Oh, John, that man just telling you things. You know what well he hadn't. I saw him the other day with a cast on his foot. I thought anybody that had anything to happen to him was drunk." Anyway, the judge finally got tired of John and called him in and said, "You know, I've had enough." So he had to leave. Before he left, he called Easy. And he was drunk. John was. Said, "Easy, my wife is just drinking herself to death." Of course, we were divorced then. And Easy says, "I know." And John said, "Would you go to see her?" "Yeah." So Easy gave him this book. And when he left, he took the book with him. And he read it. And he said, "Uh-huh, I knew it. I knew she's the one that's causing all the trouble." So he sent it to me. And I never forget the day I opened it up. You know, we're real lucky now, because the book is in dull blue. Then it was bright red and yellow. And the letters, I know they were tall as this thing right here. It just scared me to death. I wrapped it up so quick because they didn't want anybody to see it. and stayed in the closet for 3 years. One afternoon, I came home, and my mother said, Rose, the nicest looking man came to see you today, and had a woman with him. And I don't know who they were. I said, oh, I don't know. Somebody I owe money to, I guess. And I went in, got me a bottle of beer, and the phone rang. And this real Yankee-talking woman said, Rose, I understand you had a drinking problem. Well, you know, I just didn't like that very much. And I just, I'm not very nice now, but in those days, I was a real fireball. Especially after one deal. And I let that poor lady have it. Ooh, I was so ugly to her. Of course, I just, you know, had two of my children, and my father-in-law had two. And my life was just in a royal mess. But I couldn't admit anything, nothing. Well, things did get too bad. I couldn't stand it. I don't know how that I have the audacity to stand up here and admit that. I was out late drunk one night. And my mother told me she'd had enough. And I told her I had enough. Can you imagine such a thing? And I said, I'm going to leave. And she said, where are you going? You haven't got any place to go. And I went and called John. Now, this time I asked him to marry me. And you know, he didn't want to do it. But he didn't know what else to do. He really didn't. So, we went over in Georgia one Sunday afternoon and got married. Well, I wanted him back in Montgomery. I didn't want him up in Birmingham. Because I couldn't go up there every time I wanted to go. So I got him fired from the little piddling job he had. And he came on back to Montgomery. Now, I don't want y'all to have to try to figure this out either. I know you're wondering, why in the world are we getting any money to live on? Because he wasn't going to work much. My father's mother had set up a little trust fund for me when I was a little girl. And I'm sure if she had known how I was going to turn out, she would have changed her mind. But about this time, I received this trust fund. And I want you to know we picked it to the birds. We moved into an apartment on the other side of town. You know, I told her, John, I said, you know, our problems are over. We get away from all our families and get away from all the people we know, and we'll be all right. That's how fouled up I was. Well, when we moved into this apartment, I want you all to know that this is when the real alcoholic drinking set in. See, we didn't have any supervision at all. And we could do just like we wanted to. I never will forget one day I walked in and I said, well, if you don't work, I don't have to work either. I quit my job. You know, I tried to do everything he did. And if it's any alcoholic woman here, please don't try it. We women can't do the things men do. You know that little old saying, a man is drunk as a lord? Did you ever hear anybody say, a lady's drunk as a queen? I didn't. I'll say I was not one anyway. Well, John was getting enough. And we'd been drunk for several days. And he would go off and leave me, you know. I was one of these kind that was scared to death to be by myself. And I didn't want him to go on. But he'd just do it to try to straighten me out. So he left me. And that dog, I heard him hollering from the mama. Come to the door and let me in. And I knew if I didn't go, the police would come. So I went down there, and he had two men with him. Now, these men were from AA. At this point in my life, I was ready to do anything. Ready to do anything to try to keep him. So I said, well, all right. By the same token, he knew that I wouldn't go to AA unless he went with me. So he went with me. Now, when I say we went, that's all we did. We went to the meetings. I looked up on the board and it said something about I am powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable. I said, I can't drink like a lady. But I'm getting up cooking those children's breakfast every morning. And I'm working. And I'm handing him the paycheck. My life's not unmanageable. Came on down there and said something that made a decision to turn my life and my will over to care of God. Mm-mm. I couldn't do that. I wanted to run the show myself. The second step that I skipped over said something about insanity in life. I didn't like that at all. But he wanted me to go. So I went when you went with me. I still hadn't read the book. And you know, it's the most interesting thing to me and the strangest thing to me is that I sobered up. Now, I say sober. Maybe y'all are up to call it dry. But I stayed dry for a year and a half, doing nothing except attending two meetings a week for 6 months. Then I quit because I was going to have another baby. And I said, you know, that's not any place for a lady to be in that condition. Of course, I had a sneaking suspicion that John was drinking while he was out of town. And he was. Well, the day came for Rusty to come, and he tossed me out. He'd been in Dolphin, and he says, I don't see what in the world you picked a nightfall. See, he had a hangover. And he took me to that hospital, and he deposited me, and he went home and went to bed. The nurse said, Ms. Britton, he was asleep when I called him up and told him. I said, that's all right. You know, I'm just so dumb. I could have got me a Cadillac that day if I just asked for it. He looked at Rusty, and he said, I got me 3 queens and 2 jacks, a full house. Oh, he's so proud, little Rusty. Well, we had gotten Daryl and Laurie back, see, because his daddy had died. And his sister-in-law had, you know, she didn't want them. I don't blame them. They wasn't hers. And I was glad to have them back. And everything had sort of fallen in place. John had him a finest job he'd ever had in his life. And he said to me late in that summer, he said, Mama, you've just been working so hard. I'm going to take you on a little vacation. So we were going to go to Florida. Before we got out of city limits, he looked at me and he said, Mama, you reckon you could drink a bottle of beer? Well, it just scared me so bad, and I didn't know what to say. I really didn't. I said, I don't know. Rather than going to the hotel or the motel like normal people do, we went to the bar. And, you know, for some unknown reason, I don't know why, I didn't get drunk. I drank with him.
And he had a gay time, got drunk, stayed drunk the whole weekend. I was driving him home. We're coming on back. He looked at me and he says, "This is what I've been trying to get you to do for all these years." And I said, "What?" He said, "Drink like a lady and drink just enough to take care of me." Well, I said to myself, "Oh, buddy, you've let the cat out the bag now." Well, this was the start of 3 horrible years for me. If I had to go back to those 3 years, I would be dead tonight. I was an acute alcoholic by this time. My life completely revolved around the bottle, and there was nothing I could do about it. I was working for the state of Alabama, and they called me in, and they said, "Rose, we know what you're doing. It's got to stop." I said, "All right." In about a week or 2 weeks, I fell down and broke my 2 front teeth off. They called me in again, and they said, "Rose, have you ever tried to stop drinking for the person that you love the most in the world?" I had tried this. Didn't work. But I didn't have the intestinal fortitude to tell that man that. So they fired me. They said I wasn't bad enough. But those men were so good to me, they sent a man to give me a job. They knew John didn't have a job. He'd lost his job by this time. So they sent a man to give me a job. I worked for the man a week and called him that, you know, same old jazz. "The maid's not here. The children are sick." But during that week, the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life happened. I came to the end of my road. Now, this was a week in May, 10 years ago. And my little Beryl was going to graduate from junior high school. And my little children came to me on Wednesday and said, "Mama, please try to get yourself together." And I said, "I will." And I do try. You know, I bathed and I washed my hair and rolled it up. But on Friday morning, I was still drunk. And those blessed little children came to me again and said, "Mama, it's all right. We know you're sick." Now, you see, they knew I was sick before I did. During that night, I didn't know how to pray. I was spiritually sick. I had left God. And all I did was ask for daylight and say, "Now lay me down to sleep." And daylight came, and I called a lady in AA. To show you how frustrated and rumdrum I was, it was on a Saturday morning, and I called her office at 6. And the old janitor said, I must have sounded so desperate, he says, "Lady, I think if you try her home, you might get her." Now, John was in another room, and I went in there, and I said, "John, I've come to the end of my road." He said, "What you gonna do?" I said, "I'm gonna call AA." And he said, "I'll see for what? Humiliate yourself again? Rose, you are hopeless drunk. You'll never be anything else." I said, "Well, John, you drink and do as you want to, so long as you don't bother what I'm going to try to do now." You know, he never had heard that before.
because I never had said anything like that before. I like to think, and I believe, that I was making a stab at the third step right that time in my life. I had made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood him. The lady came, and I know she never saw anybody like me. I looked like a haint. My old gray hair, you know, spring, I couldn't even comb it. Little Ducky combed it for me. But do you know something happened? And I know what it was. It was a power working. Because on Monday morning, I went to work. And when I went to work, the man didn't ask me where I had been. All he said was, "I'm so glad to see you, I could kiss you." That Monday night when I left to go home, I didn't try to look for John. I knew he was drunk. And I always, that was my pattern. I always tried to find him, either on the phone or any way I could. I didn't ask the children, "Where's your daddy?" All I could think about was getting to the AA meeting. You know, I remember what my speaker had to say that night. He talked about taking a vacation and either going on a direct route or taking a detour. I also remember being so dishonest. Those people asked me, "Where is John?" I couldn't bring myself to say he was drunk. I couldn't do it. I'm one of these people that feels like we receive everything that we need at the time we need it. On Thursday that week, John asked me, "Said, Mama, can I go to the meeting with you tonight?" I said, "You can go to keep your mouth shut." He loved to talk. And we started a new life together that very night. And, oh, it's been such a good life. From that night, we found out that we had to be honest. Not particularly with you, but with myself. And he had to be honest with himself. He worked the program the way he needed to work it in his life. And I worked it the way I needed to in my life. However, he helped me a mighty lot. Now, we were the type people that drank a lot, and we needed a lot of AA, thank God. Because I feel like AA about building a house. If you build your house on sand, when the wind comes, it's going to blow down. But if you build it on rock and a good foundation, when the storm comes, it'll weather it. We went to lots of meetings, 4 or 5 a week. He didn't have a job, but he got me one. And you know what? I still have it today. Well, you know, your life is just, when it's all messed up, it's just like a jigsaw puzzle on paper, all the pieces out here. But you know, if you let it, it'll all fall into place. And that's what happened for us. Everything started falling into place. He got me the job for good. Then he couldn't get one. And it was getting to be December. And old Easy was still around, and so Easy got him one. Oh, he's so dear to me. It was a little peddling job, selling little gas heaters for little gas companies. But he took some state examinations, you know, and before you know it, he went to work for the state. Then before you know it, he got a job right next to Easy, working for the gas company, and worked with Easy for over a year. He's the type of man that has an answer for everything. Things going on pretty good. John heard about his job that he'd been fired from, that it was going to be open, so he decided to go see the man. So he told him, says, well, now, you know, this is tough. These national organizations don't want drunks. But you get me some letters, and we'll see what we can do. So don't get them from their A numbers now, John. So he went around, got him a bunch of letters, and the man sent them out. And you know, they sent a telegram. How the man faced. Well, it's been going on real nice. But you know, I'm a high-strung woman, and I still hadn't gotten over it. Now, one day I waked up, Saturday morning, my little 16-year-old girl went off and got married. Well, I thought the world comes in. John says, Mama, it's not gonna stop. Just calm down. You know, that's the first time that I realized I had received anything from this program. I had realized that I had received a semblance of serenity. I could lay down at night and go to sleep. But you know, this little boy, she mad, he didn't like me. He thought I was a possessive, jealous mama. And he told me about my dressing too. Told me I never had done anything for my child. Well, I was so blessed again because I realized that if I was to take this thing in, you know, and let a resentment grow, I'd be in trouble. So I better start to work on it. So this is the way I did it. Each night when I would go to bed and thank my God as I was standing for my sobriety and my blessings, I would also ask him to bless my little son-in-law in every department of his life. And at first I thought, oh, you're such a hypocrite. But I kept on and I kept on. And every opportunity that I would get, I would do it. And before you know it, I'm in a minute. Well, this has taken a long time. But tonight, I don't feel any resentment towards my little son-in-law. And I didn't see him or his little wife, my daughter, for 3.5 years. But they came to see me last summer and stayed with me a week. And you know, I think he likes me a little bit now. At least he accepts me. And that means an awful lot to me. I have gotten a little ahead of myself. But I wanted to bring out the point of working on my resentment with this young man because it means a lot to me. About this time after Laurie had married, John wasn't feeling well. And my oldest daughter and I talked about it. We tried to get him to go to the doctor, he wouldn't go. But finally decided he would. And as soon as the doctor made the examination, he called me in and told me the trouble. For just one little incident in my life, at one just little fleeting time, I wasn't thinking about myself. I said, what are you going to tell him? And he said, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So, about this time, I was fortunate enough to make a little trip. I hadn't been by myself very much. I was working with these children and all, and I was mighty frustrated, I have to admit it. And I got up on the airplane and I got to thinking about these things. And you know, I was way, way out of step. I was way off the program. I wasn't living 24 hours at a time. I was living 6 months, a year, and 2 years in advance. And I was thinking, This time, I was thinking, what's going to happen to Rose? What in the world am I going to do? Well, I went down there and I tried to make that talk. And in sitting and talking with this woman, I realized this business of being off the program. And we were looking at a little Episcopal paper that morning. And this was in it. Today I will try to live fully this day only. Not to tackle my whole life problem at once. Things I can do for several hours would appall me if I had to keep them up for a lifetime. So I will live the fullest this day. Today I will be happy because I will try to please others. Happiness is from within. It is usually not a matter of externals. The greatest joy comes from making others happy. Today I will try to adjust my personality to what it is. I will not begin to try to adjust everything to my own personal desires. I will also try to cooperate with the inevitable rather than to beat myself against it. Today I will try to strengthen my mind and my body. I will exercise my mind and try to learn some little something that I did not know before. I will exercise my body sufficiently to do the work of my mind. Today I will try to exercise my soul in three ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not let them know what I did. Who did it? I will do at least two things that I haven't wanted to do because I ought to, and for the exercise that affords my soul. Today I will set aside a quiet time. It may be only for 15 minutes. But I will be all by myself and relax. Before I finish these quiet moments, I will meditate upon God, that I may better understand my own life. Today I will do these things just for this day. I will be unafraid, not even afraid to be happy. I will enjoy God's creation, which includes everything. When I got back to Montgomery, I went to the hospital, and John says, Mama, these doctors tried to scare me to death. They told me I have an incurable disease. And I said, what'd you tell them? Told them that makes me have two of them. The doctor says, well, what do you mean? Says, well, man, I'm an alcoholic. So, he says, I told him I work on it 24 hours at a time, just like I do on being sober. Doctor shook his head. And the doctor shook his head many times for almost 2 years. It was proven to me during that time that I will always receive what I need. All I have to do is to ask for it and then be grateful for it. I can't expect things to straighten out themselves. I have to realize this is a real world I'm living in, and that I have to do my part to straighten them out. I also have to keep my heart full of love. Without it, I'm nothing. Nothing. I have to replace the resentment with love. That's what I have to do. I have received everything that I need. Maybe not always what I want, but what's good for me. When the day came that John was to be taken away, I had the thought that I would be a mighty, mighty ungrateful woman if I would sit down and say, poor Rose. He had never said to me one time, why did this happen to me? He had always come to me and said, Mama, that office was full of folks sicker than me. So it was up to me. What was I going to do? Sometimes I hadn't wanted to do it. But I can remember him telling me when I was drunk, go ahead and do what you got to do and quit stewing about it. That little thing has helped me more than anything I know about. Just go on and do it. I've had many adjustments to make. And I've had to realize that I'm a human being. I'm not any different from anybody else. Now, I don't want y'all to think I'm partial to my little Rusty. But he's mighty dear to his daddy. And he's mighty dear to me because he's the life one there. He's a little fireball. And I have to, you know, take him down a notch or two sometimes. Not long ago, he's just full of himself, you know, and just carrying on. And I said, now, Rusty, darling, you know, you can't take the credit for that. He's got big old brown eyes, and he looks at me and he says, I know it, Mama. I said, you're going to have to give God the credit for it. Now, he gave you the ability, and you got to give him the credit for it. Yes, ma'am. He walked out the kitchen. He came back to me, and he says, now, Mama, if I practice on it, and I keep on practicing on it, what about that? Well, I said, well, Rusty, now I'm going to tell you about it. That's all right. But now you know about Mama and about the drinking. And it tells me that I have to practice these principles that are set forth in my life and keep on practicing on them and practicing on them. And everything will be all right. He said, that's right, Mama. That's just the way I feel about it. I've been blessed with a gift of sobriety. And there's only one way I can keep it. And that's practice the 12 steps. Work at them. Some days harder than others. And work on me. The people like you are the ones that keep me going. I would never be able to repay my debt, never, as long as I live. Because I have something that I treasure so much, and it all has come from people like you. I believe, just like I'm talking to you, that if I ask my God each day to grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change and the courage to change the things that I can and the wisdom to know the difference, His will be done, that I'll be all right. Thank you so much.